Well, that's fun.
We love to have visitors, and we appreciate the young folks coming from Beijing and touring our city and coming to City Council. So the first item, Carla, is time certain 804.
Adopt the Safe Routes to School primary investment routes and project list, including Fix Our Streets project.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. So for 13 years, Portland has been a national and statewide leader in safe routes to school, both education and encouragement programs, and continues to support families in walking and bicycling to school. Over the past year and a half, the Portland Bureau of Transportation staff engaged school communities and a stakeholder advisory committee to create a plan for prioritizing citywide transportation safety projects. And I'm pleased today to introduce a resolution to adopt primary investment routes and a robust project list that will guide our investments in neighborhoods throughout the city and help kids get to school safely. I want to thank the community members, some of whom are here today, who have participated in this planning process and continue to support healthy and safe streets. And their continued support attests, I think, our concern for kids throughout our city and their well-being. Today's resolution allows PBOT to move forward on a funding strategy to implement a focused set of projects that increase street safety for students and families in Portland. So I'd now like to invite the PBOT Director, Chris Warner, Art Pierce, Catherine Charlo, and Dana Dickman for a short presentation.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'll kick it off. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners, Chris Warner, I'm the Interim Director at the Portland Bureau of Transportation. As you know, Safe Routes to School touches every part of our community. It has been and was a huge priority for Leah Treat, and so we're just here to continue the cornerstone work that she's been working on through the policy, programmatic, and outreach work. Today, the Safe Routes team will share the work over the past year to create a Safe Routes projects list. Construction has already begun on a few of these projects. The next installment of these projects will be built in 2019 and 2020 as part of the Fixing Our Streets funding measure that passed in May of 2016. So I'm going to turn over to Art. He can kind of give an outline of the broader picture. Then we'll go down to Dana and Catherine.
Great. Art Pierce, Policy Planning and Projects Director for PBOT. So this next slide illustrates the sort of many benefits of the Safe Routes to School program. I think we're already starting to be familiar with how this benefits youth. So youth in specifically increases their activity, connects them more with their neighbors and with the surrounding community. It really also fosters independence. My own 11-year-old biked to school this past year, and it was a notable change of the independence of him leaving on his own and returning home on his own. And so I think that, it really can see a confidence building in the youth as they're experiencing mobility in the city on their own. I think what we maybe are less cognizant of is how much this benefits all of PBOT's system management goals as well. When we're looking at how congestion impacts our system, I think we underestimate the role of school traffic and school logistics in contributing to that. National statistics tell us that about 14% of morning commute trips nationally relate to school trips as part of their trip. So if you picture someone able to send their child off independently, they're then able to make the broader set of decisions that they might otherwise feel weren't possible in terms of taking transit or cycling or other types of means, carpooling. And so I think it's very important for us to continue to sort of remember that some of these small, seemingly small moves are what make the broader ecosystem continue to function. One of the other things that's really important to note is that it won't be just students who are making use of these safety improvements, particularly in crossing on busy streets. All of the community can, seniors and others that want to take advantage of these crossings because they will also access parks and other community locations. I think, you know, one of the other things, of course, we're very proud of the significant role that this Safe Routes to School topic area fits within the broader Fixing Our Streets program. This was really sort of a cornerstone element of that broader Fixing Our Streets program, and a significant funding stream towards this project list is coming from there. So what we have brought for you today really does, again, relate back to the transportation system plan. We are asking for your adoption of the primary investment routes and giving direction to incorporate those routes into the update to the pedestrian plan, which is currently underway. And that pedestrian plan would then bring that through into the next update of the transportation system plan when we initiate that. And this direction also directs PBOT staff to use this new project list as we're looking at ongoing programmatic investments. We now have an annual funding stream for small projects, one of them being for Safe Routes to School projects, and we can use this list as the list to work off of. It's already been heavily vetted and prioritized, so it's a great place to start for those annualized programmatic investments. I'm going to pass it over to Catherine, who's going to tell a little bit more about the details.
Could I ask you a question?
Yeah,
can
sure.
You go back to that slide? It's a very basic question, but it's one I've often wondered about.
One back.
So, this one.
Oh,
here.
This one. Oh,
this
sorry.
Is perfect.
Yeah.
So,
oh, yeah.
You know, obviously, the primary purpose of this resolution is the first bullet point to identify right. The primary investment routes. Could you just tell me from a code perspective, why does it have to be integrated into the TSP, the Transportation System Plan? Is that because through code the investments have to go through the TSP?
There's a couple
here?
Places in which I think it'll influence. One is about prioritizing our investments, so it's telling us where we should be focusing our efforts and influencing the project list formation. Another piece is if we're looking at the classifications of streets, this adds a new lens around child safety to the classifications we already have. We already have local streets for driving, for walking, for biking. We don't necessarily have this youth lens brought to that. And so I think it helps emphasize, you know, the importance of these specific projects.
So would the TSP, the Transportation System Plan, does it also give us the guidance then between different sets of priorities? So the Safe Routes to School is obviously a priority, but we have many transportation priorities. Is the TSP where we reconcile the relative weighting of those priorities?
It is. It certainly gives that guidance at the large project scale, so more than 500,000. We have a major projects list in which we currently have them sorted into a year 1 through 10 and 11 through 20, and we're working on a 10-year investment strategy. At the programmatic level, it's really the funding allocation between the various programs. So we have a bike network completion program, a Safe Routes to School program, a pedestrian network completion, freight deficiencies program. That's really where we start making some of those emphasis choices between how much funding we put in those various buckets. So at this point, it's relatively evenly distributed. Over time, as we have more funds, we'll probably be emphasizing differently.
Okay, and that's helpful. And just one more 101 question for me here. So is the TSP, is that as a result of city policy, or is there a state policy that mandates we have TSP? How does that work?
The TSP is part of the comprehensive plan, and so with each update to the comprehensive plan, we update the transportation system plan as well. So we just went through, as you recall, a very lengthy process. This is probably the first sort of new item on the work plan for the next TSP that will go through the pedestrian plan update. And so as we're starting up the next TSP process, we'll be updating the project lists, the policies, and sort of various other elements. In the next round, we'll have the freshest information around pedestrian, and we're just now scoping the freight master plan, which would be another new element to add into the next.
And I lied. I actually did have one more question. Are other bureaus engaged? Once you have the TSP, obviously, I can think of all kinds of overlays with other bureaus. Do other bureaus acknowledge the TSP, or is it somehow used in other bureaus' planning exercises?
It is, I think, to varying degrees. We have partnership relationships with a number of bureaus. Probably the best example that we're working a lot on right now is with the Bureau of Environmental Services, where we're overlaying our investment priorities with them very directly.
Yeah, and thank
and looking
you for
at
that,
how that,
by the
yeah,
way. That's,
yeah.
That's,
yeah. No, but it's been a terrific partnership. We really are breaking new ground with them.
Okay, so. Good. Thank you. I appreciate that. Sorry for the digression.
No, it's fine. Yeah. Catherine?
Great. Yeah. Thank you. So we're going to dive down just a level to talk specifically about the Safe Routes to School program work and project prioritization work that was done as part of the plan that I think is in front of all of you. But before we talk the details of the project selection process, we wanted to give you this slide, our umbrella slide, which just sort of lays out this 5 E's approach, which more and more is becoming a 6 E's approach. I think many of you are familiar with this, but this is this integrated approach to getting kids to school safely, having to do with engineering, which is mostly what we're going to talk to you about today, infrastructure, but also wraparound programs that educate kids on how to move safely through the community, that encourage walking, bicycling, and transit use, and often help families feel more comfortable and understand how to integrate that into their daily routine, that really evaluate the effect of improvements and programs, and that incorporate partnerships with enforcement to make sure that we're really achieving the safest environment possible. So we have those 5 E's, and then more and more, our Safe Routes to School work is becoming grounded in equity, as so much of the city's work is, looking at ways to address both displacement and historical underinvestment. So you're going to hear a lot about that today, how that informed the process we went through. So both Art and Chris alluded to the fact that this $8 million that we're talking about that's already dedicated to the plan was included in the 2016 Fixing Our Streets measure. And it was a little bit different than a lot of the other pots of money in that measure in that those were attached to projects when the measure passed. This money was set aside for Safe Routes to School, but then in part as a result of conversations with some of you, PBOT was directed to put together a very inclusive and fast process to do some community engagement and project selection. And so that's what led to this, and that's what we're going to describe in a little bit more detail today. Before we go into detail on that, though, I wanted to just make sure that we establish the basis for the allocation of funding. And what you're looking at in front of you here is the map that essentially was a part of or came directly after the Fixing Our Streets measure. This is not part of the project decision. This was the pre-dedicated allocation of the $8 million. The purpose here was to look at where population is and where the highest levels of need were, and also make sure that because this was a citywide measure, there's some investment in all parts of the city. So this was our starting point for the project prioritization process that we went through. And then this map I'm putting in front of you, it's pretty hard to look at. Really, you're going to see some more maps today, so don't worry about it. But this is really just a snapshot to show general distribution of projects around the city. And Dana's going to show you a couple more maps that illuminate some different things about the way the projects are distributed. But this is just a snapshot of what went public in May. It's an online map. It allows people to zoom in and see projects by high school cluster or zoom out and see projects citywide. It's going to allow us to track progress, record funding for projects, and record when projects are built so people can sort of see very transparently the effects of their investment through Fixing Our Streets. It was translated into Arabic, Russian, Spanish, traditional Chinese, and Vietnamese. And the map itself also includes information about the selection process and the way the community was engaged. And then the last thing that I want to just touch on briefly is the project timeline. You can see, and we've mentioned before, we were asked to do something very quickly. The voters in 2016, I think, weren't interested in a 4-year prioritization process. They wanted to see things on the ground. We wanted to see things on the ground. So what you see in this project timeline is in the early parts of 2017, we gathered quite a bit of community input, and Dana will talk a little more about the process there. And then in the later part of the year and this year, we did the technical evaluation work that she'll describe. And as a result of that, came out with the project list that we're going to share with you and the primary investment routes that are being adopted into the TSP. As Chris mentioned, a few of these projects are actually under construction this year. The bulk of them will be built in the 2019 and 2020 construction season. The farther out ones are the bigger ones that take more time to tee up, like sidewalk projects and the bigger signal projects. So I want to turn it over to Dana. The last thing I want to do, though, before I do that, is just thank Dana for her amazing work on this project and thank the team who's in the back. We had a really remarkable staff group, Janice McDonald, Zhao Zhang, Abra McNair, Lale Santelises, and Taylor Sutton. Each of them brought so much to this work and this project, and we really couldn't have gotten where we are without them. So thanks, Catherine.
So when we started the process of figuring out how to take this $8 million and figure out what the project should be, we knew that we first had to really talk to people about what their concerns were around the schools, what was keeping them from feeling safe no matter how they were getting there. Ultimately, these projects are walking-focused projects, but we really had conversations with community about what their concerns were around safety no matter how they were accessing the school. So we worked in close partnership with the five school districts within the city and determined what was going to be the best way to reach out to the community members in their schools. With PPS, we partnered very closely on 8 open houses, one for each high school cluster. We also did an open house with Park Rose. It's a smaller district, and having one open house at their middle school really served that population well. For David Douglas, Reynolds, and Centennial, we did some very targeted outreach with schools, and those targeted outreach pieces range from meeting with parent groups that were Spanish-speaking parents to going to a middle school classroom. In each case, we had great, robust participation and learned a lot. We had almost 300 folks attend the open houses. With those school events, we had over 460 attendees. We also were fortunate to have Oregon Walks partner with PPS and lead 10 walks at high-need Title I schools to just dig a little bit deeper on what the needs were for families at those schools in walking and accessing the school. And our Safe Routes to School team did an additional 3 walks. So we had 13 walks with over 170 families or participants engaged. We knew that not everyone could come to one of these events, so we also created sort of a parallel online open house that asked similar questions and gathered information that was similar to what happened at the open houses. We had an additional 400 people comment there through the open house. And then, because as we've heard, we have a 13-year-old program, our staff went through, I think, over 8 years of parent surveys and pulled out comments, over 3,000 comments that we had about specific concerns that parents had about issues on their streets. So we were able to take all of that information and really have a good understanding of the concerns that families had in walking and biking and taking transit to school. I also should mention that, again, when we asked people at the open houses and in these events how they got to school now, it was about a 50-50 split, about 50% walked or biked and about 50% were driving or taking the bus. And so we felt like we got a really good understanding from families that were coming to school in a variety of ways about their concerns. I also want to mention before I move on from the overview of the engagement that one of the things that we wanted to do in talking with families was both gather information from them, but also share information that would help them understand how we were going to use their feedback, and then also just help them understand the decision-making process. So we created interactive exercises that shared information about infrastructure and costs and just how we make decisions at the Bureau. We heard many, many times how helpful that was to have both opportunities to give feedback but also to learn something at these events. So one of the things we heard loud and clear, I'm sure this is not going to be a surprise to any of you, was that safer crossings were the number one concern. This was true across all neighborhoods. People are really concerned about kids crossing major streets. We also heard fast traffic, high levels of traffic, and lack of sidewalks were primary concerns. I do want to point out that there were some nuances there. While across the board, crossings were the biggest issue, in the David Douglas High School cluster and in the Wilson High School cluster, sidewalks was parallel to crossings. For obvious reasons, those neighborhoods have fewer sidewalks, and so those issues were elevated in those places. We also saw some nuances that we were able to bring into kind of the route planning piece around where students and families preferred to see routes. For example, in some of the inner neighborhoods, there was a strong preference for local streets as much as possible getting off major streets as they were going to school. In some of our neighborhoods in outer East Portland, we heard from parents and students that they preferred some of the larger streets where there was more activity and more eyes on the street. So the outreach really helped us to understand that we couldn't, you know, use a one-size-fits-all analysis. We really had to look at the individual situations happening for each school. In addition to that outreach, we had a stakeholder advisory committee that met six times throughout the course of the process. We had a member from each of our five school districts. We also had Safe Routes to School practitioners, folks from school-based programs, Oregon PTA, and then also community-based organizations that, while they may not be engaged deeply in Safe Routes, were really representing groups and families that we knew were living in underinvested areas or places where we knew we wanted to invest. So with all of that information, we still had to figure out where to focus our investment. And so what we determined was one of the best ways to do that was to identify primary routes and really focus the investment. What you're looking at on the screen is a kind of a graphic depiction of how we determined or how we thought about how kids move. All of us have kind of watched kids go to school through the neighborhood, and they move really organically. They move sort of similar to this, where it's kind of like a stream order, and they move on to major streets and funnel down to the school. So we used that thinking to help us develop a computer model. As you're looking at this, think of the blues and the greens as kind of individual kids, individual trips coming from their house and funneling down to the street that's the most direct path to the school. And where you see the orange and the red, that's where we're going to focus our investment. We knew that the need is great throughout the city and that we really needed a way to target our investments to make the biggest difference for families and students trying to get to school.
Can I ask you a question on mm-hmm. that? That's interesting. So investments are prioritized based on volume rather than safety?
Let me tell you more. So what we did was we looked at this was sort of the high level model, and then we, with the help of a consulting firm, Tool Design Group and CH2M, now Jacobs, they helped us develop a model that looked at first at housing density. So where were the trips most likely to be generating from? And we were, again, able to look at this in a nuanced way. There were neighborhoods where it looked like there was a lot of housing density, but actually that was a senior residence. And so we were able to know what exactly was happening and where kids would be living. We also looked at shortest path and combined those two pieces of information, knowing that pedestrians, but especially child pedestrians, tend to take the easiest and the shortest path to get somewhere. And then we looked at existing infrastructure. So where did we already have safety improvements made that we could route to? Now, I want to call that out specifically because one of the things that we heard over and over again in our outreach, and it's something that we kind of know intuitively from other pedestrian outreach, is that kids and families won't go much more than a block out of their way to go to better infrastructure. So if you think about that, our kind of past practice has been like, well, there's a crossing three or four blocks away. They can go around to go to that. But what we've found out and what we've heard over and over again, that they're going to take the shortest path. And so what we did was we looked at where we could reasonably find a shortest path that had existing infrastructure, and where there wasn't that infrastructure there, that's where a project was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So the primary routes looked at density, shortest path, existing infrastructure, and then where we heard from school communities there were already kids walking, like paths that were already established, and we overlaid those to identify approximately 4 to 6 routes per school. From there, we still had to identify projects. So what we did was we took those routes and identified safety issues or lack of infrastructure on those routes, and that's what created the project list. From the project list, we then worked with our advisory committee and the work from the community to prioritize that list, and then that's what became the Fixing Our Streets projects. It's kind of the graph that you're seeing in front of you now. The types of projects that came out of that analysis varied greatly. In some cases, we just needed a marked crosswalk. But in a lot of cases, the routes that were preferred based on shortest path, most likely, and preferred, we would need to do sidewalk infill or we need to do a significant updated crossing. So the project list has over 1,200 projects and ranges everywhere from, like I said, a $3,000 marked crosswalk to a $500,000 signal, depending on what the need is on that route. We have over 600 crossing projects, over 500 walkway projects. Walkway projects can include a shared use path connection or sidewalk infill, and the total project list is over 1,200 individual small projects. Of those projects, about 88 of them are funded through Fixing Our Streets. We took that information, and I'll talk a little bit about the prioritization criteria in a minute, but we took that whole project list, looked at what the priorities were, and identified 88 projects. We have an additional almost 70 projects that are funded through existing pieces. One example is Glen Fair Elementary, 155th and Gleason was an identified priority crossing, but our federal project, the 150s Bikeway, is already going to improve that crossing. So that's when you see the funded by other projects, that's what that number represents. With that, we have about 1,000 that are currently unfunded. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I know that equity is important for everyone on the council, and we really wanted to highlight how much that influenced this whole process. Our stakeholder advisory committee worked with us on developing the criteria by which we took that massive project list and identified which projects to move forward for this first phase of funding. Equity and safety were the two primary criteria that we used to identify what are the projects that we want to move forward first. When we talk about equity, we're meaning race, low income, and limited English proficiency. Those were the categories that we looked at. And for safety, we looked at whether or not it was on a high crash corridor. We looked at speeds and volumes on streets and the number of lanes and really looked at what was happening on that street and what could be causing safety issues for students.
So you didn't look at people with disabilities and equity?
We didn't. When we spoke about this with our equity manager, our understanding was adding that, and when we looked at the data, adding that piece in didn't change the overall allocations. The disabled population is more dispersed in the community, and that adding that in is we're not including that as a specific metric in PBOT's equity matrix.
That wouldn't... I wonder how it might have changed, because there are some schools that are more accessible and therefore tend to have higher populations of students experiencing disabilities. And so, yes, I hear what you're saying in terms of whether they would be driving anyway. And still, that is somewhat of a concern to me.
Great. I think the way that our program tends to really think about disabled students is through the programming elements. For example, when we have a bike education program and we work with a specific organization that delivers bike safety skills specifically to disabled students, and then also our provider, the Street Trust, will look and see if there's any specific accommodations that need to be made, like bringing in trikes or other types of bicycles to engage kids that in the regular programming. So that's typically the way that we've engaged with disabled students.
Would there be an opportunity moving forward to combine with the recent settlements on the sidewalk ramp improvements to make sure that where, I mean, I know that that project is trying to partner, and if there's an opportunity to look around the area so that if we're doing this nice improvements on the arterial or on the main, I forgot, the number four, whatever that was, if there's a, if there are any sidewalk impediments in the area, that might be a way to look at it. Because, you know, our city's equity policy does look at race and disability, and so transportation is one of the key bureaus for implementing that. So just something to think about moving forward.
It's actually already come up as we've been looking at the details of these projects. Because of that settlement, we are looking more broadly at the curb ramps around a specific project. Like if we're doing a sidewalk infill project, then the ramps kind of attached to that are also being done. So I think that's already happening. But thank you for bringing it up specifically.
I'm actually kind of shocked that that's not a consideration. I'm a parent of a Portland public school student with a disability who uses a wheelchair, and when I get Safe Routes to School materials in his backpack, I roll my eyes because they don't include or accommodate my family. So thank you, Commissioner Fritz, for bringing that up. And I would certainly hope that curb cuts and ramps would be part of this.
Absolutely. And they absolutely are. In fact, thank you for bringing that up. In some of the cases where it's just a marked crosswalk and and it's considered a small project, part of it is getting the curb cuts in, too, because we have plenty of routes right now where the curb cuts just aren't there. So while the census data for disabled students and families wasn't included as part of the equity criteria, it's absolutely being considered in the project development and project design.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to share this as we're thinking about moving forward. You saw that we have over 1,000 projects that aren't currently funded. This map shows kind of the overlay of investment need with that data related to race and income. The darker orange represents higher populations of people of color and more families that are low income. The circles that you're looking at represent the costs associated with the projects. So if you look at East Portland, you can see that there's a significant need for investment overlaid with people of color and low-income families. If you look at kind of the central east side, there are certainly projects there, but they are on lower order streets, so it's a marked crosswalk. In East Portland, we're looking at crossing, you know, Division and Stark, and so those investment needs are greater, even though it's still just a crossing need. So now I'm just going to turn it back to Chris to talk a little bit about what our next steps are.
Thanks, Dana. Kind of to round it up, I think the next slide kind of shows you the situation that we're looking at. As you can see from the slide, even with the major investment from Fix Our Street, which is the $8 million, and the additional work we're doing, which is about $17 million, we still have work to do with about $253 million of identified Fix Our Street or Safe Routes to School work we need to do throughout the city. So we'll be back to you later this fall. We will be applying for a grant through ODOT and the 2017 money in terms of Fix Our Streets. There's some money dedicated to that. We'll be bringing a grant application to you to move forward with that money. We're also looking at there's, I know, talk of a regional bond measure and Fix Our Streets. Safe Routes to School is going to be a part of that, and we are going to be looking for every pot of money we can find. So whether it's federal grants or whether it's other state or additional local funding, we really want to maximize the investments in these routes because we think they're so important. And certainly, I think it's something the community has really been asking for, and we're able to deliver on some of this, but there's still much more work to do. So I would also, we're going to We're going to turn it over to some folks from our advisory committee, but I also wanted to echo what Catherine said about Dana and the work that she did and the whole team. So this has been a very long process in a very short amount of time. So I just want to thank the work they've done and the community's work as well, because without their input and their kind of speaking up and helping guide us, we would not be where we are today. So I think you have the list of community members. And
yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chris, Art, Catherine, and Dana. And I'd now like to invite up members from the Stakeholder Advisory Committee to hopefully speak in support of the Safe Routes to School program.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You'd like to start?
Okay.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners.
Sorry, could you turn that? Just leave the microphones on. Yeah, that'll be fine. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. My name is Brendan Haggerty, and I represented Multnomah County Environmental Health on the Stakeholder Advisory Committee. Part of my job is helping our partner jurisdictions create healthy communities, healthy neighborhoods for all. So it was a gratifying experience, and I was very glad to be able to bring a public health perspective to the discussion. I viewed this project list as a real investment in public health, and I'm just going to take a moment to highlight a couple of reasons why. So safe routes to school are really important for kids' health, and they're really important for a couple of main reasons. The first is that they protect kids from injury. And injury is a leading cause of premature death for young people in Multnomah County. The second main reason is that they promote physical activity. And physical activity is important because it directly prevents obesity and chronic disease. But it's also important because it helps kids concentrate. It improves cognitive function. And when kids show up to school and they're able to pay attention, it sets them up for success at school, and we know that that creates a foundation for lifelong health and well-being. So I'll finish by commending PBOT on a prioritization process that puts health and equity at the center of the investment plan. I think it's notable that there was strong agreement among the stakeholders about the importance of emphasizing equity in the prioritization. And for me, that's really important to see, because we know that there are disparities in the built environments that kids experience every day. And over the long term, those can manifest in disparate health outcomes. We see different rates of diabetes in different communities, for example. So for me, this plan represents a really positive step toward correcting some of those disparities. And I'm glad to be here to offer the full support of Multnomah County Health Department.
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Lopes-Sahau. I am the new superintendent in Park Grove School District, and I've worked with the Safe Routes program, I think, since its inception 15 years ago as a principal and then as a district administrator and now as a superintendent. I'd like to cite significant reasons why the Safe Routes program's benefited our community in East Portland. Number one is the safety of our students. We are one of those communities that lacks sidewalks. So many of our students, when they do walk to school, must walk on the side of the road. And many of them, if you watch our kids walk to middle school and high school down Shaver Street, they actually flock down the middle of the street, which is also a TriMet route and a route that many parents take to school. So obviously, there's still great concern in our community about safety. However, Safe Routes has been instrumental in reaching out to our community and asking the more important questions about what are the safest ways for kids to get to school, and what are your concerns? I've seen this demonstrated not only over the last year, but I've seen it demonstrated over the last 15 years I've been in the district. These meetings have been intended to inform families about the process of prioritizing routes to get kids walking and biking to school. Even though many of our elementary schools are walkable, most of our parents drive our kids to school due to the lack of safety and their concern for their child's safety. We've really been appreciative in our district of the encouragement programs, the questions that came up earlier about students with disabilities. One of the remarkable things I've seen from the Safe Routes encouragement programs is they include all students.
That includes in those bike safety programs where they've provided a lot of accommodations to include all kids. I think the encouragement programs, particularly in districts and areas of the city that are under-resourced when it comes to safe routes, these encouragement programs are vital to helping kids learn to navigate the neighborhoods they currently live in. And we want them to be able to know how to do that, particularly as they get older, because most of our kids, once they turn 11, 12 years old, they want to walk to school. They don't want a ride to school. And we want to continue that encouragement. The other significant reason is access. It's been instrumental in working with our schools to provide quality educational opportunities, as I mentioned. The ongoing bicycle safety, I think, has been very important because there is a drastic difference between the Park Rose community. I live in Southeast Portland. Just the number of routes that kids can actually take in a safe way to our schools in Park Rose is limited. That's been a big part of the conversation that the Safe Routes folks have included me on and been very interested in our community, and I have genuine interest in continuing that work. And last is equity. Park Rose is very appreciative of the work. We have a lot of underrepresented families in our community, and they many times have expressed concern of whether the city's involved, and I think Safe Routes has been a great representative of the city of Portland in Park Rose. It's been a constant effort. And I think that their presence in our schools has made a difference. And you can see it not only in our kids, but you also see it on the streets. You have speed bumps that mitigate some of the speed issues that we have in our neighborhoods. But you also are starting to see improved crossings that allow for students of all ages to cross 102nd, 122nd Avenue, which are both very busy roads and key pathways for our students to get to school. I am just here to advocate for the program because I see the difference, not only in the practical structures we see in our neighborhood, but also in the encouragement that our kids see in our classrooms. Thanks very much.
Hi, my name is Lisa Kinsel, and I am the former Portland Council PTA president. For 4 years, I was the Portland Council president, overseeing 75 PTAs in the Portland area, PPS, 50,000 students in our district. I'm currently the VP of Leadership for Oregon PTA, and I participated in the Stakeholders Committee. My interest first began in Safe Routes a few years ago. I have three students who attend PPS. I have three boys, and they're all in a K-8 building. And we identified that safety was a concern for many of the parents in our building. So we set about creating a committee within our PTA to focus on traffic safety and reached out to Safe Routes to help us with that process. We participated in creating a mapping situation where we worked with our school secretary to get all of the information necessary to create a map of where all of our students were coming from in order to get to our building. And from that, we broke it down based on K-5 students and then our 6th through 8th grade students, because our middle school students tend to travel in a different way to the building. When we identified the routes that they were taking and that some of them were crossing Foster, Powell, and Cesar Chavez, we realized we had significant safety concerns for the students in our building. So we reached out to Safe Routes at that time, and they came out and they assisted us with creating a situation or a scenario where we changed our bus routes, because we have multiple buses that come to our building. The Columbia Regional Program is housed in our building, and which draws students from all over the city. So there's about 7 buses that arrive to take those students home every day. And we have 2 regular school buses that also come to take students that live within, you know, more than a mile from the building, and all the children that walk and bike to school or don't because of the lack of safety. So Safe Routes was very instrumental in coming out, meeting with us multiple times that year as a committee, and prioritizing ways that we could create a safer zone around our building. That was my first experience with Safe Routes in working with them at that level. I was asked to participate in this Stakeholders Advisory Committee, and I was drawn not only for my own safety concerns and my students' safety concerns in my area, but overall the impact on student safety and the impact on the community and living in Portland for 27 years, I've seen a lot of changes in our city and the number of people and the number of people that are out and about and more cars on the road. So that was a big concern for me. I also realized that this committee and their focus on equity was in direct alignment with PTA's mission, and I was very happy to be part of the process. So right now, our next steps for PTA is we are working with Safe Routes to continue this conversation, encourage our PTA leaders to have health and safety committees within their own board structure, and work directly with Safe Routes to impact student safety in their own buildings.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sumitra, and I work with IRCO as a program coordinator, and I'm really glad to be part of the Safe Routes to School Committee and give inputs from the community's members and community leaders. At IRCO, we've heard a lot of concern from family and kids again and again about not wanting to walk to school because there is no sidewalks, there is no, you know, safety when they walk to school, especially in the winter season. So I was really glad to be part of it and give inputs about, you know, what works in our community and how to engage our community in the process. So I'm really glad that equity is one of the top priorities for our, you know, stakeholders. And that's something really important that when we look into East residents, you know, coming from working the family in East Portland, that should be prioritization, because when we put sidewalks or, you know, create sidewalks in the communities where it's much needed, family have more access to those things and they're more willing to walk to school. So as I work with, you know, refugee and immigrants family, and I'm a resident myself at East Portland, I know many families that who don't often want to walk to school because their kids are simply, you know, there's no proper sidewalks and everything. Also, when we talk about safety, it is really important that we not only talk about building or creating sidewalk, it is also ensuring that it is safe for kids to walk to school, especially a lot of minority students or kids or family do not feel safe to walk in the street because, you know, they might be marked by who they are and their skin color. So it is important to kind of add that component that it is safe to walk to school, and you know, that whole neighbor engagement component should be kind of added to that community engagement. So making sure that families knows it is safe to walk to school, and, you know, the family engagement part is important. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. That completes the invited testimony.
Very good. Carla, is there any public testimony on this item?
No one else signed up.
All right, very good. Any further questions of staff before we take up the vote? Carla, please call the roll on the resolution.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank our stakeholder advisory group committee members, all the people who showed up with their students at the open house events, and one of which I attended myself and did a walk. I forget the name of the school, but I was there. And I really appreciate all the work of PBOT staff and you know, thanks to voters for once again for approving the funding of Safe Routes to Schools, along with all the maintenance and road rebuilding projects we're going to be doing. These are very important investments in our future for our families and for our residents. So pleased to support it. Aye.
You Daly.
Well, thanks for the presentation, and thanks everyone for coming to give testimony. We have only received supportive comments from constituents in my office, and it's exciting to move forward. Aye.
Fritz?
Well, first, thanks to Commissioner Steve Novick and former Director Leah Treat for their championing of the Fix Our Streets projects and bond measure, as well as this entire program. Second, thank you to staff for implementing it even better than I had hoped for. I was particularly grateful to hear about your outreach and the things that you learned, and just really well done. Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your ongoing leadership of this. Thank you to the young people who came and sat very quietly and well-behaved and reminded me, at least, that your part of why we're doing this, and that your city, your city council, and the people of Portland care about your safety. And so that's the same for all of the people at home. I just flipped through the project list, and I'm almost tearful to see that the Southwest 35th from Huber to Stevenson is finally on the list, 2020. I hope I live long enough to see it. And thanks to Adam Grimshaw in the West Portland Park neighborhood, that's the street by Jackson. And my kids couldn't walk there. It's less than half a mile from my house, and I had to drive them every single blooming day because it's simply not safe for anybody. So not only will it help the students getting there, it will really open up our entire neighborhood to have a way to get to shopping, to this transit center, to various other places. So this benefits all of us, and thank you to the taxpayers of Portland for paying for it. Aye.
Wheeler.
I can do nothing but heap on more praise. Thanks to the people of the city of Portland who voted for this, who supported it. I'm in the same boat as Commissioner Udaly. It's a good day at Portland City Hall when the email you get on a particular item is uniformly positive. And I think that speaks volumes about the need and the public support for this program. And certainly, Commissioner Saltzman, I want to thank you for your leadership as the Transportation Commissioner, and to everybody in the Bureau who's worked so hard on this and will continue to work so hard on this. Commissioner Fritz called out the young people and thanked them for their good behavior. I think it's only fair that I thank the older people here for their good behavior as well. That's an inside joke. maybe not. At any rate, it's a great resolution. I support it. I vote aye. The resolution is adopted. Thank you, everybody, who worked hard on this. Carla, without any dissent on this, I think we can read 805, 806, and